You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And here we are, Charlie and I, looking out the window here from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village, waiting for the snow to arrive.
And I've got my snowshoes in the car, just in case.
Yeah, well, it apparently is moving in from the Hamilton area.
Yeah.
I imagine Buffalo is going to be buried. From the sound of things, you know.
Certainly, I think Niagara Falls will
15
be.
15 to 25 centimeters sort of to the west. Mm. And, we're going to maybe about
40 down St. Kitts Way, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Big snow. Well, maybe we'll get some calls from down there.
Well,
and
yeah.
Those people can tell
give
us. What,
give us a weather report.
Here, it's just little dust coming down.
It's not much. I don't think we're going to get slammed
Well, where you and I live, we're up north of the 401, north of Highway 7. Yeah. We're going to get, like, nothing.
Yeah.
Or
that's what
virtually
they say.
Nothing. That's
well,
what
we hope so, anyway. I always get a little concern about the drive home up the 404, you know.
Late in the afternoon.
Not so much, you know, but it's other drivers
exactly.
who just don't can pay attention, and they're not driving according to conditions. That's the problem.
Well, you know what's interesting, too? I go to Costco for various and sundry things, and every time I've been in Costco for the last 2 months or more, there's been lineups at the snow tire area.
Good Lord.
So yesterday I was in there and there was nobody there. And so I said, wow, you'd think with a snowstorm coming, there'd be people in here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you know, we've been just busier than ever, but, you know, it's slowed down now. It's January.
Yeah.
And I said, but the good thing about that being so busy is more people have snow tires.
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, I have snow tires this year for the first time in 20 years. So,
well, my son,
more.
Toby, you know, Alan Gelman and the guys who are going to follow us with, you know, a guy, Dave's Corner Garage. Sent Toby over to Alan Gelman's, the Glen Allen Motors there, to get his get new tires on. He lives right downtown, so it's not as imperative for him to have snow tires.
Yeah, but he's got little kids,
and
you know?
Yeah, but he's got all seasons, and
yeah.
Alan said, no, he's going to be fine. But he's so delighted with the treatment
tires.
He got from the guys.
Oh, yeah.
Really, super, super.
I've been in there. The one time I was in Glen Allen, I felt like I was on a Cheers episode.
Yeah.
It was so.
They're always, you know,
bantering
having with the customers
back and forth
and folks come in to hear the latest joke.
And never, there's couches everywhere. Sit down, relax, have a nap.
Do you know what? we better get to business
the garden
here.
Show.
That's what this is all about. We're in the gardening show?
Yeah,
okay.
You're right.
So the numbers, let me give them out. Alrighty, let me see. In Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere else in the province, 1-866-740-4740.
Well done.
Thank you very much. And if you're a first-time caller, please let Sebastian know, our operator, and he will pass the word on to me. And when you get to the airwaves, just before you speak, you get that. Yeah, your garden wings. Call early, call often, one question per call. There you go.
And I think it'd be a good day to get wings.
Yeah.
You know, get up out of the snow and off into the, find some sunshine above the clouds.
Yeah.
From last week, a couple of updates.
Okay.
We left the show, our last caller, I believe, was Gloria, and she was looking for an easy perennial vine to grow up a dead crabapple tree that she's left in her garden as a piece of statuary.
Gloria, right here in Toronto, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay, you got that. All right, so, so I was like, I don't know. I sort of threw out a few suggestions. Okay, one of our listeners came up with a very good suggestion. Gloria, if you're listening, honeysuckle vine.
Oh.
Because honeysuckle, sun, shade, you know, dapple is fine. Sweet, fragrant flowers, very pollinator supportive.
Yeah.
Different colors are available. There's the sort of an ivory colored flower, there's the red flower, and there's the pink flower. So you've got choices there in which color you want to grow, and they're pretty easy to grow.
Mm.
So I think honeysuckle is a great suggestion. Also, one other. Oh, I put the name Gloria again. It wasn't Gloria. We had a question about delphiniums. Growing delphinium from seed, and that was Mary calling from Etobicoke, and she wondered when and how to grow them. And again, a listener reminded me to say, to be successful with delphinium seeds, they must be frozen 48 hours before planting. So stick them in the freezer for 48 hours before you plant. Thank you to Edna and Paul for keeping me on track. It's always nice to have a team working in the background.
And believe me, I know what it takes to keep you on track.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And just a quick reminder, 2 weeks from today, Terry Kennedy will be joining us here on The Garden Show, and she is here on behalf of the Southern Ontario Orchid Society the famous Orchid Show, which is coming up February 9th and 10th at the Toronto Botanical Gardens.
All righty. We have at the moment, I'm looking at the monitor here in the studio.
Phones are ringing.
Some folks are just calling now. That's good. Okay. And we'll be back to chat with them here on Zoomer Radio in just a couple of moments, okay?
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, we have a first-time caller on the line.
You're going to get some exercise.
And at first I thought, the caller's name is Ziggy. I thought, is that our Ziggy who does many shows here? I don't think so, because we're going to St. William.
Williams.
Oh, I'm sorry. So that is near the Lake Erie shoreline.
Turkey Point.
Okay. Well, good morning, Ziggy. Welcome to the show. And
Merry Christmas.
and Happy New Year.
Belated Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Yes, the way I was saying to the gentleman there is I've been using for sawdust kitty litter. Instead of kitty litter, sawdust.
Okay,
so I've got this mountain out the back that's about 3 feet high, 20 feet wide, and 10 feet long. How long do I have to leave it composting before I can grow veggies and stuff in there?
Just a quick question. How many cats do you have?
I used to have a lot. Let me put it. I used to do rescue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Now I'm down to minuscule.
Fewer than 30. 10. Oh, okay. It's 30. Wow.
Wow. Really?
Wow.
Well, I used to have upwards 300.
Wow. Oh, my word.
How the heck
did you afford to feed them?
I used to get donations.
Yeah. All right.
It's the kitty litter that took the time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, yeah.
And they were all inside, or you have like them in a barn or something?
I have, no, they're inside, but I have outside enclosures built.
Oh, very good.
So they can't get out. They've got a steel roof above them.
Mm-hmm.
There's four different enclosures so that new colonies that come in aren't near the old colonies.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow, you're like a great cat psychologist, I bet, now.
And a people psychologist.
Oh, perfect. There you go.
Well, if ever I want to find out how to herd cats, I know where I can go now.
Well, go to the Humane Societies because the stopwatch is on them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's true.
Other places, most rescue groups don't kill. Some do.
Uh-huh.
Don't give anything to PETA.
Right.
They kill.
Yeah.
This sawdust out the back, it, of course, has everything in it. Ammonia evaporates.
Sure.
I've been mixing in fertilizer.
Oh, don't. You don't need to.
Oh, I was told I had to do it to speed up the composting.
But keeping in mind, what is ammonia? Ammonia is nitrogen and hydrogen.
Yes.
So it's the... nitrogen feeds the bacteria. Well, the bacteria that do the decomposing use nitrogen in the process. So that's why people say fertilize to speed things up. You know what I'd be inclined to do? Do you have access to any farms at all or anywhere where you could get a hold of some manure, animal manure, not like sheep or cow.
Yes.
It could be well composted or it could even be fresh.
Yeah, I'm living out in the country. Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
Oh, good.
That would speed up your decomposition. If you can get a sprinkle, you said about 5 by 20 by something. So
by 10, yeah.
By 10, yeah. So if you could even get a whole yard or even 2 yards, cubic yards of some manure, what's going to come in that manure is a whole bunch of amazing little organisms and bacteria that are going to chow down on that sawdust very quickly. You do have to keep the moisture levels up, obviously not now, but when we get into spring or summer, make sure this is kept not soggy moist, but we always say the best composting moisture level is, or decomposing moisture level, is like a wrung out sponge. So it's got a bit of dampness to it, and you turning So getting on a digging fork and sort of flipping the top a few. You don't have to go right to the bottom.
Yeah, I've been doing that with a pitchfork.
Excellent, because that, again, that's going to keep it cool. The problem with composting is that it's an exothermic reaction, so it gets very, very hot inside.
Yes.
And the bacteria that are creating all that heat end up committing suicide because the heat levels build up so high that they die.
Really?
Oh.
So that's why we flip.
That's not a good idea.
Well, no, that's why it is good to do that flipping, that opening up, because that cools the temperature down, keeps the bacteria alive. So, yes, it can be done. You can be gardening. One quick question. The source of the sawdust, where are you getting it from?
From a private guy who does only custom woodworking. There's no glues. There's none of that horrible stuff in there.
And so obviously he's using good quality woods, hardwoods, obviously.
Very good quality wood.
Wow.
So there's nothing nasty in there that can hurt anything.
Right. Okay, so your bigger challenge is going to be finding out what your pH levels look like, because this is 100% organic matter. It's going to very quickly decompose. There's no question. You will see a drop in that. If you do the things we've talked about, you'll be down to knee height on that entire berm by, you know, July 1st. The question is, will it be a healthy soil to grow vegetables in? That's when you're going to need to do a soil test.
Okay.
So, and from where you are, it's not that hard to send off a soil test to the University of Guelph, though there might be a place closer. I'll double check.
Well, I head in that direction quite often anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and basically all you do is you online, and I can give you the address once we go to a break, and I can come up with the address. You go online and you send them a quick email. They send you a package, and the package tells you how to take the test, the little bag, the box, the form to fill out, and then you drop the whole thing in the mail. It costs, you know, $45-$50, and two weeks later, they email you all your results.
Wow.
It's
very
effective.
That's not a bad price.
Yeah, no, it's totally worth it, because there's no point in, you know, being so close to having a good soil when there's sort of one important element missing.
Yes, I've got a farmer willing to bring his plow out and flatten it down a little bit.
I don't know if you want it flattened down. It depends. What's the quality of your soil there? It's pretty good, isn't it? Your native soil?
It's very good. The backyard, it's all moist. It's next to a bush. Mm-hmm. There's a little creek that flows through there, not too close to my place, but when you walk right at the back where all this is, the soil is quite spongy.
Right. So that's what worries me about bringing the plow in to flatten. You want to avoid too much compaction in that soil, even the soil you're creating there. Compacting is not a good idea. You need that flow of gas and air in and out of the soil. So my first impulse would be, I don't think I'd be necessarily rushing into compacting it. I'd worry more about getting it decomposed, and let's see what the quality of the soil is.
I definitely need it flattened down a little bit, because it's a little bit too high to...
It's going to drop. As it decomposes, it's going to drop.
Well, it's like I'm constantly putting more on, but I'm putting more on the front. The back part has dropped already.
Right. Yeah, good idea. So sort of organized at your fresh versus your old ends on this berm.
What an interesting.
So how many calls like this have you had in your lifetime?
This one never. No. This is a new one.
This is a brand new one.
But you know what? I did something very similar where my children's playground used to be in our backyard, very dark corner under a tree, but you know, with swing set and lots of kids' activities, super compacted soil and super shady. I, with my kids' help, took everybody's bags of leaves in the fall one fall, and we did a berm very similar to what you're talking. It's 25 feet long, it's about 5 feet high, and it was about 6 or 8 feet wide, and my neighbors are like, what are you doing? You're starting like a composting facility? I threw some manure on there, got some water on there, my husband went out there and stirred it every now and then, and I planted that berm in July.
No kidding.
It had dropped down to below knee height from 5 feet high from November to July, and it was mostly leaves, right? So it was leaves and people's planters and all their stuff, weeds and stuff.
Well, I think what you're doing for the cats is pretty
good on
remarkable.
You.
Yeah.
Well, I don't believe in using the clumping. That kills animals more than it helps them. Mm. And the clay litter, it's too heavy, and it takes a couple years to even start to compost.
Oh,
that's right.
So that's our environment, I think, is a little bit too fragile to put up with too much of this stuff. Yeah. And the more people get cats in that, the more of this junk is going into landfill.
I can hear a cat in the background.
Now, just there, one?
There's
just
the next one. Great, Ziggy, what do you name them all?
Yes, they all have names.
You're kidding.
And I have a very good memory. In all I've adopted out, well, or no, I shouldn't say adopted out, taken in over 4,500 cats.
Wow.
But I'd say the circumstances, the places that I get them from aren't always the best.
Of
they
course.
Don't always make it.
Yeah.
Distemper is one of the biggest killers and feline leukemia and FIV.
Yeah. Feral cat that adopted us also is FIV. So, yes, they can be compromised for sure. Well, good on you. Good on you.
Thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate that. A lovely story.
Yeah. Great question, too.
And what a fabulous question. Yeah. Good luck with all of that.
Yeah. Thank you. You want to do the numbers there?
Sure thing. Here you go. In Toronto, 416-360-0740. Maybe you'd like to comment on that last call. 1-866-740-4740. Right here in Toronto. And we have to take a little bit of a break. We'll be back in just a moment here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty, so it's Charlie and I back at it here,
And just Frank and I.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're kind of lonely.
Well, hello there. In Toronto, phone number to call and rescue us.
And you will get on, trust me.
Yeah, absolutely. 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province is toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. You know, it's funny. I had to get some gas this morning, so I had to go east to Highway 48 and then south to my favorite little gas station where I paid 95.9.
More than I paid yesterday.
Well, yeah, I understand.
My
you
favorite
went to Costco,
gas station, yes.
91 cents.
91. 90.9.
Anyway, in that little trip down 48, I glanced at one house as I went by, and here the gates, the whole house still festooned with Christmas lights,
wow,
blazing away like crazy.
So maybe it's so much work to put them up that they just leave them up year-round.
I guess maybe they do.
And maybe they forgot to turn them off last night.
Yeah, maybe
or
so.
Or they're on auto or something.
Well, there's a guy right across the road on Kennedy Road from us. He's got this beautiful, big, got to be about 25 feet high, and he leaves those lights on year-round.
On an evergreen,
but it's beautiful. They're blue lights.
Oh, beautiful.
And you can see it for miles.
Glowing
in the
snow.
Just lovely. Yeah. And so I'm wondering how many people are still dealing with their Christmas lights, you know?
Yeah, or
the odd snowman still lurking around somewhere.
Well, we're going to be building snowmen later today, right?
Well, that's what they say, yeah.
But I mentioned to you, I have a neighbor. She is of Russian heritage, and she celebrates the Christian Orthodox event in January, as opposed to December.
That's right.
So she always has her tree up far beyond anybody, and hers blinks. So it's talking about seeing it from miles away.
You got it. Well, we better go to the lines here. We're getting some calls in already, which is just great. Thank you very much.
And it looks like Siva's on
Siva.
The line.
Yes, Siva. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to know how soon can I plant lettuce? Like what month? April, May?
Outside or inside?
Outside.
Well, you're going to have to wait till we're frost-free.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably May.
Okay.
And the soil warmed up. It just depends how winter goes and how spring goes. But if you have a bright windowsill or a little grow light of any kind, you could plant lettuce inside right now.
Oh, okay then.
Because it grows fast.
All right. I still have all my butternut squash and so from last summer, so I'm good.
You're good for the weekend, are you?
Yes.
Hunker down.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And in Sutton, Ontario, Janice is on the line. Good morning, Janice. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I bought an amaryllis bulb last November thinking I was going to have some lovely blooms at Christmas, but it did not bloom. At the moment, the bulb is still sitting in front of my living room window, a sunny window, and has four long leaves, probably almost 4 feet long. I've been told I should just not worry about it and get rid of it. Will it ever bloom again?
Where did you get that bulb from?
Home Hardware.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So the way bulbs work, the bigger the bulb, the bigger the flowers, and the better the chance of flowers, because that's just an indication of the maturity and the age of the bulb.
Right.
So if you have followed all the instructions, planted it properly, watered it, given it lots of sunshine, and all you're getting is leaves, you have two options. One is, you're right, toss it, compost it, give up. Option two is let it be a green houseplant. This whole winter, spring, once we're frost-free, get it outside for the summer, let it be a green plant outside all summer.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of August, say, and sort of write this on the calendar to remind yourself, put it somewhere, put it in a shed, somewhere where you're just going to forget about it.
Right.
So from out in the nice sun, nice green plant, you're going to tuck it into a dark, doesn't have to be cool, but a dark spot and stop watering it.
Okay.
The leaves will turn yellow because of lack of water and lack of light. At that point, you'll cut them all off or they'll fall off, and you'll just let it sit there in that dark spot. Now, you don't want it to get frosted, so if we get, you know, frost, you'll have to bring it to a frost-free dark spot. And then, just let it be for 10 weeks. After 8 to 10 weeks in that darkness and that quiet, dormant state, bring it out into your living room, get it on that sunny window ledge, water it once, and it should flower. I've had excellent success the last couple of years.
Okay, so it's worthwhile just waiting and trying it out anyway.
Well, honestly, I beat myself up because I totally failed at getting flowers on amaryllis for years when I would try to reflower them. But the ones I'm having very good success with were very good quality bulbs.
Right.
So
right.
They were very big, very solid, you know, sort of grade AAA kind of excellent, you know, super, super bulbs.
This
I think
one
that helps.
Seemed to be, a good solid bulb. But anyway, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, don't give up. I mean, if you've got room for it to be a big green plant, let it be that big green plant for at least give it another year.
I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, thank
you. Let us know how that works out.
Yeah, keep in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right. Bye-bye.
Rep Sutton, we're going to take a little trip.
Mm-hmm. Give a quick little plug.
Sure.
The excellent amaryllis bulbs that I have that I'm telling you about.
Bulbs are us, isn't it?
Flower Bulbs Are Us.
That's it, yeah.
So Flower Bulbs and then the letter rus.com or 1-888-890-0936. Caroline DeVries is the person who runs this particular retail outlet. A lovely person who came out to Durham College with myself and my students, and we planted 6,000 bulbs, most of which she donated to the college.
Isn't that
so?
Cute?
She not only donated the tulips and daffodils and hyacinths, she did the work too.
Right. So, and before we end the show, I want to get you to tell a little story about a new
Humber,
member of your
Humber College.
I will. Right. A new student you have. Okay. Meantime, they're waiting on the line patiently in Orangeville is Ron. Hey, Ron, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning and Happy New Year to everybody.
Good morning. You too.
A friend of mine, she got a amaryllis a year ago. Mm-hmm. It bloomed and then it had a seed pod come on the top.
Mm-hmm.
She saved the seeds, let them dry out, and she planted them. She has one little plant growing.
Yeah.
Now, does it take years before it will become an actual bulb?
Yep.
I've never heard of it before.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. That's exactly how they're propagated. So it's, I mean, unless it's a cultivar, what we don't know when we plant seeds, we don't know what's going to come of that seed, like what the flower will look like. With the named cultivars, they are propagated with by cloning so that they know exactly what's going to be the flower that emerges from this baby bulb. But it does take years to get mature enough to actually produce a flower. But if your friend wants to give it a go, why not? Just let it. And you know what she could do to even speed things up is you know how we're always talking about dormant period for amaryllis to get them to flower?
Mm-hmm.
With the little baby bulbs like that, don't even force dormancy on them. Grow them as a greenhouse plant year-round, 12 months a year. So no forced dormancy. Sunshine, water as required, out in the summer, in the winter. Let them grow bigger and bigger that way.
Oh, Okay. Thank you very much. I will let her know.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Ron.
You have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks.
That's nice calling on behalf of a good friend there.
Yeah.
Before we take an X-ray, we got time for one more call here. And so, with that in mind, we're going to head to Scarborough. And there's Margaret. Hey, good morning, Margaret. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year, and welcome to all.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding orchids. I've never been lucky. I just received some new advice, and there's a few things I've been doing wrong, like, for instance, leaving them in their nice decorative pot.
Yeah, yeah.
And the question I forgot to ask the person who has given me the new advice is because the roots have to be sort of in the air,
mm-hmm.
is I have one of the small miniature ones, and then a larger one, not the 6-inch one.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both in those little plastic pots in the bark.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've already raised them out of that,
mm-hmm.
and I usually have stones in the bottom of the pot for when it's watered, and they're sitting on a bed of stones in water.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if I should transplant them out of those clear plastic pots that they're sort of enclosed in, and, you know, let the roots spread out more. What do you think?
You know what? If you were going to do that, you would, and it is possible that it's appropriate based on the fact that there's just so much root happening. The plants are growing. The pots are just too small. The issue is that you do want to, if you're going to transplant an orchid, you want to go into another orchid pot that is slightly larger than the current one they're in. There are plastic orchid pots, there are ceramic, there are terracotta. They are designed quite differently from our traditional flower pot because they have a lot, they'll typically have slices missing out of the sides of the pot so that there's very, very big air circulation going on around the roots.
I've never seen one. Where do you buy an orchid pot?
Oh, well, there, your timing is very good, my friend, because you live in Scarborough. You are not far from the Toronto Botanical Gardens at 777 Lawrence Avenue East, so Lawrence at Leslie.
Oh, I know where they are, but, and I heard the dates again. I heard from last week.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I'm going to be around then.
Oh, well, you're going to have to send somebody to get you.
Yeah.
Where you are, is there still a Sheridan Nurseries not far from you? Because they carry orchid pots.
Okay, yes, I know where the Sheridan Nurseries are.
You could go in there. I mean, they're obviously open, you know, 7 days a week, as far as I know. They do have orchid pots. They also will repot for you if, for whatever reason, you're at all stressed about doing it yourself. Because the main thing with orchids is we want to keep those roots above ground. There's a whole bunch of gas exchange and moisture taken out of the atmosphere by orchid roots. The only reason we have them in pots at all is just to hold them upright, really. It's in nature, they do not have their roots in the ground. They just kind of hold on in little nooks and crannies wherever they land.
Well, the one is sort of the smaller one, sort of the mini one. I only purchased that less than a month ago, and it still has its flowers and a couple of bulbs.
Right.
And it's in that sort of conical, I guess you could say, small plastic pot inside another one.
Mm.
And that's the one I've raised to the surface.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess that's not time for transplanting.
Probably not. Probably not. It's probably going to be just fine to if it's only been a month. And, you know, you can see it's when the plant is really pushing itself right out of the pot, like it's falling out onto the table. You know, you need a slightly bigger pot. Or it's so top heavy, because that happens too, right? We've got so much upper growth and such a tiny pot below, the whole thing wants to fall over. So if it's only been a month, and also avoid transplanting when an orchid is blooming if you can, just because you should cut the flowers off if it is blooming when you transplant, and nobody wants to do that.
No.
So, so I'd wait on that if you can. But if you can get to that orchid show, you can get all the supplies you need, plus all the advice you need. Pots, media, expertise like crazy, and even pick up another orchid if you like.
There you go.
Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, Margaret. We've got callers. We've got callers on the line. We'll be getting to in just a couple of moments. First, a word from some of our fine sponsors here on Zoomer Radio, The Garden Show on the air.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, you know, Charlie, we've been all over the map this morning, so let's take a little drive to Cambridge, Ontario. There's Lorraine on the line. Good morning, Lorraine.
Hi. I want to ask about, I've got asparagus plants and spider plants mm-hmm. that I hang out in the summer, and they're healthy now. Mm-hmm. They're inside here. Now, they need to be repotted, mm-hmm. like they're coming out of a pot, yeah. they're raising up, but I like the pots because they're handy. So I was wondering if I could just take them out of the pots, cut off a whole lot of root, mm-hmm. and replant them.
You can. In both those cases, though, you're going to find probably when you get those plants out of the pot, there's just going to be a whole bunch of roots that's not sort of traditional fibrous root. It's going to be almost like tuberous root. It's a,
right.
And when you do your slicing and dicing to shrink that root ball down, you're going to want to slice in such a way that you minimize the surface area of wounding that you leave behind. So all I'm saying is that instead of slicing some of these rhizomes in half and having this massive amount of exposed tissue that you've sliced into, you're going to have to kind of spend a little bit of time probably with some pruners and go in and take out so that, you know, take out that half a rhizome, if you will, so that you've got, you will have surface area exposed that you have pruned and thus damaged. But if it's a nice clean cut and it's as minimal as possible in terms of exposure to the soil, the fresh soil, the old soil, your chance of success would be better. I also would try and put off this process. It's going to be a bit of a messy process if you can till at least February, preferably late February, and your chance of success will go up.
And did you say I would snip off the rhizomes or cut them?
Well, snip, cut, probably pruners are going to come. You're going to use both a carving knife
right.
to shrink the size of that root ball. You're going to scrub out your existing pot if
right.
you want to go back into it. You're going to have fresh potting soil
right.
on hand, moist and ready to go. I just think that when you cut, you start slicing with your carving knife, you're going to end up with some large exposed sort of rhizomes that have been sliced in such a way that you sort of halfway through on the longitudinal, which is a lot of tissue exposed. So I'd go in there with my pruners at that point, see where that rhizome starts and snip it off right at the top, get it right out of there. Just to, like I say, have less tissue, as little tissue as you can that's been damaged with the cutting exposed.
Okay.
It'll just be a little bit fiddly. You'll see once you get in there what I'm talking about. It'll make more sense. But both of those are good, tough plants.
Yes.
Easy to work with. And if you like the pots, I understand your desire to keep them going. But just put it off if you can till the end of February.
Should I cut off the baby plants
on the spiders?
Yes.
Well, that would be a way that you could actually technically throw out mom and just
yes.
keep the babies and put those babies, you know, put a couple of babies back into your favorite pot and give the rest of the babies away to your friends. I love spider plants in the garden. They can be a really nice little addition in containers or right in the ground as an edging plant. They look like a little grass, right?
Oh, yes, they would. That would be good.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't toss them out. I'd keep them just for nothing else, just incorporate them into some ornamental gardening and then let them die in the frost. Don't worry about it.
Right, I was thinking, if I took them off, it might make more strength go into the main plant.
Technically, yes, but they're such a vigorous plant, I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't take off the babies on principle.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Lorraine. And as we say goodbye to Lorraine, that leaves a line open, 416-360-0740 in Toronto. Anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Let's go to Scarborough now. There's Gloria.
From
good morning,
last
Gloria.
Week.
I'm sorry?
From last week.
Yes,
good morning, Gloria.
So.
Good morning. I was coming up the stairs and I heard my name, Gloria and honeysuckle.
good to know.
Was there any other a plant that you mentioned before that?
No, it was just the honeysuckle because that is a good suggestion. And that's from one of our listeners.
Can you mix it with, if I was going to put flowering hydrangea?
I probably wouldn't.
I wouldn't do it. Just
yeah,
have
to, you know why? Yeah, it's one or the other. Because partially it'll look better, but also because both of them, once they get going, particularly the hydrangea, can become quite a large plant. And I think it would just end up drowning out the honeysuckle. So I'd pick
okay.
one.
So what do I do to have a healthy honeysuckle? And just should I plant one or two around the base of the trunk of my crabapple tree?
What I would probably do is I'd get something like a probe, something that's really strong, maybe a stake, and I'd poke around in the ground at the base of your dead tree. Because what you're going to be looking for is planting pockets. So spots where you can actually scratch away some earth and in between some big roots and plant something.
Okay.
Because the honeysuckle are going to come in the minimum of a 1 gallon pot. Now, that's not that big, but it's mm-hmm. still 6 inches across mm-hmm. and 8 inches tall.
So, and just make some room in between the roots of the tree.
Yeah. So
should I plant one or two?
Well, so that's my question. How many planting pockets can you come up with? If you can come up with three, it'd be the best. Because
I'll try to get some space to put in three.
Yeah.
And what kind of extra soil or anything I should be planting with it?
Again, it's going to depend how much you can excavate out from the current situation you've got going on there. Clearly, mm-hmm. the crab apple's pretty old, so the soil is old. So, yeah, I mean, this is where we get in there. We've got like a soup spoon, and we're, you know, digging mm-hmm. a hole. So,
I know.
So you're gonna just sort of do your best to find those little pockets. You can modify the root ball of the honeysuckle when you're planting it in the spring as necessary. I've been known to make round root balls triangular because I'm fitting in between roots or, you know, elongated, you know, you can squish and modify the shape of that root ball to make mm-hmm. it fit into the hole you can actually excavate.
Okay, and what about fertilizing? When should I start to fertilize?
The following year.
Next year?
Yep. So you plant this year, you start fertilizing the following spring.
The following spring.
So 2021.
And plant them spring, would that be around April or May?
Depends on the spring we're having, for sure. As soon as they're available in the stores, which will likely be end of April, early May, depending on weather.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you giving me this information, and thank you again.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling back.
And by golly, we are pushed right to the limit here. We have another little spot break coming up here, and then we'll be back to say hi to Joan in Burlington. Stay tuned.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie, let's head off, as promised, to Burlington. There's Joan on the line. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning. You know what I like about today? You can sit inside, you look at all the horrible snow falling outside.
Horrible.
You can listen to a charming lady like Charlie giving us advice for
there you are.
For the garden. Yeah, I know. Spring is just around the corner. How much snow have you got there so far?
Pardon me?
How much snow has fallen in Burlington?
Well, not a heck of a lot.
Okay, good.
Not a lot. We kind of miss a great deal of it down here.
Oh.
Anyway, what I wanted to ask you, Charlie, was I have a bird feeder outside,
mm-hmm.
just off a patio. I would like to put some kind of a plant that would grow up the feeder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get about 2.5 to 3 hours sun in the morning and then sim the end of the day. What would you recommend?
You don't find that the squirrels use that plant as a ladder to get up to the bird feeder?
Oh, you'd be surprised what those dying squirrels would do. I had a squirrel buster.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Until you see the squirrels going up, they hang on the pole with their back hind legs, and they reach over and they take, because they're not putting the weight on the feeder, they can take the seed out.
They are so smart. It's amazing.
So I did away with that, and I just use the 90 bird seed right now, which is a very...
Oh, they don't like that much. So you know what I would probably do in your situation? Because at the base of bird feeders, it's always such a mess of seed and debris and all the stuff that drops. At the base of my bird feeder, sunflower seeds always come up because there's always a few sunflower seeds that grow. So I let them come up, and you're right, they kind of make the black pole disappear as the sunflowers grow up. Now, the squirrels, of course, climb the sunflowers. What can I say? So there's that. But if you're looking for a vine, I'd go with an annual vine. Go with something like scarlet runner bean in a 2.5 to 3 hour sun situation. You could try sweet peas. You could try morning glory. Both of which want as much sun as possible. Something called moonflower, which blooms at night if you're a night person. It's morning glory bloom in the morning. Moonflower bloom as the sun goes down. They're both the same genus, the same family.
Can I put one of each of those around it?
Yeah, sure. Then you got flowers day and night.
Yeah.
But from seed. You plant these from seed. So super inexpensive. And just hope that the squirrels don't see you planting the seed because they'll dig it all up because they're so curious.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'd try and get plants and put them down.
Yes, if you can. They grow very quickly, so they're rare. Sometimes they're sold as starter plants, but more often sold as seed.
Mm-hmm.
Nasturtium's nice, too. You could try nasturtium as the not the low, but you want the vining, climbing kind.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll try that.
Thank you, Joan.
Thanks so much for calling.
All righty.
Nice to hear from you.
You know what? We're going to squeeze one more call in.
Well, because it's
Werner from Tilsonburg. Good morning, Werner.
Good morning. Good morning, Frank and Charlie.
What's going on?
Well, my garlic is up about 4 inches.
Oh dear!
Ooh.
What do I do? Rain? Not a lot. It'll be fine. I mean, unless you've got a straw bale kicking around. No,
but I have some grass.
Grass?
Yeah, that's dried up that I threw in last fall.
Okay.
You mean cover it?
Yeah, if it's not going to... All you want to do is trap some air around the green leaves of the garlic that's come up. So you could use leaves, you could use anything that's dry that has lots of chunkiness to it, and there's some air, or even some loose soil, but of course most of the soil is frozen solid now. It might blow away, but it's going to be very windy.
Do garden centers sell bales of hay at all?
Halloween.
Oh.
Because people use them as decor.
Oh, that's right, of course.
Right. Not hay, just straw. But I wouldn't be overly concerned. Even if those tips of those green leaves get frosted off, the bulbs are still fine. They're underground. They will reemerge in the spring when it's really spring, hopefully. It's all that rain that threw everything off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Moisture. Too much rain in January.
Are you getting snow down there in Tilsonburg right now?
Yes, sir.
Is it coming down pretty good?
It's that powdery stuff to go skiing with.
Oh,
excellent.
Really?
Sounds perfect. Get out the cross country.
Good stuff, Werner.
Thanks for calling.
You see, I put that grass over, and I thought maybe it was a bit of a cover that it was kept it too warm. That's why the garlic started coming up.
Well, it does trap. Yeah, that's why we never want to make things warm. We don't want to trap heat. We just want to avoid extremes. So it's nothing wrong with doing like a mulch over where you've planted your garlic. The thing is to do that once everything's cooled off. The soil is cooled off. Temperatures have cooled off. And we get such crazy extremes here in Southern Ontario. Makes it hard for plants.
Well, thanks for calling in, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care.
You have a good one.
Thank you. Intend to.
Okay, quick. I just want to tell you one quick little story. So Humber College, I teach in the continuing ed department, started a class last Tuesday night, and we'll be doing that for the next 14 weeks. One of our listeners, a gentleman named Lou, has joined the class, which is very exciting to have he heard on the radio about the class. So he came and he's enrolled in the class. The challenge, though, is that he's not real savvy and comfortable on a computer. And the lectures are all found through the Humber College website. I load everything in there and my students can take it out of there. Yeah. So I'm hoping that Lou has contacted the administration, because I contacted them to see if we could organize some way to help him with printing those lectures out for him. But either way,
failing that, if he suddenly says, well, maybe it's a little too intensive for me.
Yeah, it might be too much.
You can get your money back.
That's right. You can always pull out early in the game with any of these classes and just get your money back.
Exactly.
Thanks, Frank.
Hey, Charlie, been a pleasure, of course, as always.
Yeah, we're off for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Dry toast.
Dry toast. A glass of water.
You have a good show later and safe drive. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.